I receive dozens and dozens of emails every day from people who forward articles they figure will be of interest to me in my work. And one day I received an email document from the Wilderness website, written by Michael Rupert, a person whose work is well known on September 11th and the events around the attacks in Afghanistan, a person whose Truth and Lies video is very well done. In fact, I introduced that video in Vancouver and spoke highly of his work. So when I received a document by Michael Rupert of an interview with Delmart Vreeland, stating that Mr. Vreeland was a U.S. Navy spy and had written, while in a Canadian prison, a note giving detailed advance warning of the September 11th attacks, I was very excited by this information.
Were you inclined to believe the story because of the source?
I was very much inclined to quote, buy it, based on Rupert's reputation. After all, I had quoted Mr. Rupert extensively in my book on September 11th called All Fall Down, and had been impressed with the citations for every quotation I listed. He had done his homework, documented his research, and so I was very much prepared to go with his statements, even though, of course, they could not be corroborated at the time. I was careful in putting this information into the fourth edition of All Fall Down to use the word alleged in relating this interview. The heart, if you will, of Vreeland's story appeared in that interview. And of course, it caused quite a stir on the internet.
What happened to make you start having doubts?
Well, the big one, of course, was when I finally got my hands on the note. At the time, as I recall, the note, this note that Vreeland claims to have written while in prison and tried to pass to Canadian authorities, warning of the attacks, was on Mr. Rupert's website, but it was under a paid section, a subscription section. And since I was not a subscriber, I couldn't access the note. And later, of course, the note appeared with you folks and appeared throughout the internet, and I actually got my first look at the actual note, not someone's description of it. And at that point, frankly, Vreeland's story of issuing a warning fell to pieces.
What in the note tipped you off in particular?
I had written a book called Bringing the War Home, the first documented look at a secret biological war in the Gulf and resulting Gulf War illness that has struck down hundreds of thousands of American veterans and their families. In the writing of that book, I came across, checked out, and published actual intelligence memorandums relating to Iraq's chemical warfare capabilities, a subject very much in the news now. So I was familiar with the format. I've also served in the U.S. Navy and was familiar with military procedure. And I noticed that, unlike any other document issued by a purported intelligence agent, this one was not dated. Dates and timestamps are critical, as you can appreciate, to sensitive intelligence information. This note from Mr. Vreeland was not dated. It was not even signed by himself. So that was the first tip-off. The note could have been written at any time. Secondly, valuable intelligence information is very specific in its assertions and warnings. And this note turned out, to my surprise, to be just a mishmash, if you will, of targets that anyone at a cocktail party, frankly, could come up with. You've seen the list yourself. It does include the World Trade Center. It includes the Pentagon, which are likely targets. It also includes the U.S. Navy Pier, the Sears Tower, and various other likely targets, including the Royal Bank of Canada and government buildings in Canada.
Do you consider the Royal Bank to be a likely target? And if so, for what reason?
I suppose any bank would be a likely target, any big bank, of terrorists who perceive, rightly or wrongly, the fundamental domination of world trade, currencies, and many lives, for that matter, by the big banks. So any bank from Chase Manhattan to Bank of America to one of Canada's biggest banks, the Royal Bank, could be targets. But I don't see in my own research anything specifically pointing to this bank. I think in this case of the note, it was pulled out of the air and put on a piece of paper. The note never singled out and does not single out the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. Again, it gives no dates. It reads more like a generalized horoscope that you could look back on and say, oh, see, it was all here. Later on, I got a former legal secretary to help me in my research, and we began digging much deeper into the claims of Mr. Vreeland, and I was only further convinced that not only the note was bogus, but Mr. Vreeland himself is a fraudsman, as the Canadian courts term him, of long-standing conviction. Use that word in both senses of the term.
At what date do you know that you started questioning the Vreeland note? How long did it take you?
Actually, it took quite a while. As I said, I summarized the information in Mr. Rupert's interview for the fourth edition of my book. I continued to receive updates from various people. And again, it wasn't until I actually saw the note, and I would say that is several months ago, that I realized something was actually seriously amiss and began to go after this story, put it on the top of my list of important stories. Not to obsess on a common criminal and con man, but because as a journalist, I was alarmed and still feel very strongly that false reports issued over the internet can be extremely damaging to serious investigative work and to the credibility of the net, which has become, as you know, a very potent source of alternative news. And I thought a story like this could undermine the credibility of every reporter working on the internet if it was not only exposed but examined for those lessons. So that's really the primary reason I took it on.
Is it your view that the note that Vreeland wrote was written before the September 11th attacks or after?
Let's go to Mr. Vreeland's own assertions and affidavits. And, of course, in retrospect, he claims that the note was written in August, and he's vague on the dates. I believe he said June 11th and the 14th of August, but several days in August. Interestingly enough, going over the court testimony, we're talking five hearings taking weeks in Toronto before the Superior Supreme Court of Ontario. In the court testimony and in his affidavits, Vreeland never says that he gave the note to Canadian authorities before September 11th. In fact, he says that he had a lieutenant open the letter, lieutenant of the jail, open his note on September 14th, 2001. So by his own admission, we can't be certain when the note went across. It could have certainly been written before September 11th. I'm not sure it was written after September 11th because obviously it could have been much more specific in its detail in retrospect, as I'm sure prisons in Ontario have televisions and prisoners have some access to the news. It probably was written before September 11th. But remember that Vreeland also says in his affidavit that he was forwarding information he'd garnered from memory, from materials he allegedly brought back from Russian, these mysterious documents of the anti-Star Wars system and specific warnings of September 11th. But, he said, information whose significance I was unaware of. So what emerges from this is that Mr. Vreeland wrote a note and literally scribbled a list of targets and some cryptic sayings, undated, unsigned, prior to September 11th, and after September 11th woke up and said, regarding that terrible tragedy, I can work with this. And working backwards on this, began making assertions for a note that not only was not his original intention, but he says whose significance he wasn't even aware of. So that's what I think happened. The motives, he's quite upfront on his motives for the note and for his many allegations of insider knowledge. And he has said publicly, and he said to the Canadian authorities, that I have information that could see Canadians injured or even killed, but I'm going to hold it and withhold it until these silly extradition charges, as he termed them, extradition to the United States, these charges are dropped. So in other words, I'm willing to allow Canadians to die for this information I supposedly hold, because this information is my lever to get out of a Canadian prison. And that scenario, I think, switched after September 11th, and he realized that because he had jotted the word WTC and the word Pentagon on a piece of paper, that this would be far more powerful, quote, evidence to prove his claims and get him released from prison. He was actually released after being held for nearly a year last March 14th, but again, not because he had achieved refugee status in Canada, as he and many internet sources claim, but simply because he was a convicted con man out on jail awaiting extradition hearings, which will be next September in Ontario.
I'm wondering if at any time you've questioned Mike Rupert's motives, because he to the best of our knowledge, still maintains that Vreeland is legit. And that seems kind of surprising to us in light of all of the information that we have available to us that would seem to contradict that. What's wrong with this picture to you?
Exactly as you phrase it. I know myself that working with material off the internet, and more specifically, working at internet speeds, it is possible to make a mistake. I have made a couple of whoppers. The only responsible reaction from a professional reporter is to immediately, on finding this out, ascertain the facts and issue a retraction, which I do, and everyone else I know who takes themselves seriously does. To me, there's no big deal in making a mistake. Mainstream media does it all the time, and they, too, usually issue a retraction. I concur, I agree with you, that, and I'm very concerned that a former detective of the LAPD, and by the way, that gave great weight, I thought, to his original interview, a man who must know how to interview, must know how to take notes, a trained detective, quote, could not get it this badly wrong. But when I sent Mr. Rupert my full article before it was published, with a covering note saying, as a professional courtesy, I want you to see this first before it's published, and if you have any commentary you'd like to append to it, I'll be happy to publish it with the article. And of course, the article did not attack Mr. Rupert personally, and today, frankly, I have no wish to do so. I think the issues go far beyond this instance. However, your point is worrying in that he, too, has told me since by email that he stands by the Vreeland story. I think he's becoming increasingly uncomfortable with it, and I'm not sure that he is using the Vreeland story and interviews in his public presentations. I have some notice of this, but I really can't sit here and claim that I know the motives behind, not the mistake, but the insistence somehow that a man who is patently not a U.S. operative did not go to Moscow, did not, as he said, himself devise the theory on which this anti-satellite system was based, which is why he says he was sent to Moscow, a man with a Bachelor of Political Science who told the judge in Canada, who said, well, how could you have devised this theory when you testified in open court that it was beyond the capacity of the computers of the time? And Vreeland's response, quote, was because of my interest in the subject. I mean, you go through the actual court testimony, and it's laughable.
I just want to ask you about something you just touched on, and that is, were you able to ascertain to your satisfaction that he, in fact, had not gone to Moscow?
No, I cannot say that conclusively. We can ascertain, from at least from another sworn affidavit, that he did enter Canada as early as the previous October from Buffalo, New York, by taxi. He says he did not present ID or himself for examination at the border. In other words, he snuck past the border into Canada. He's, by the way, a frequent visitor to this country as a criminal fugitive. And in fact, the fugitive squad of Toronto had received by then papers from the Michigan State Police warning that Vreeland was wanted under a variety of aliases for outstanding warrants in some five states, particularly Michigan, for various fraudulent acts, and to be on the lookout for them. And in fact, Vreeland was picked up on December 6th, arrested in Canada on Canadian fraud and impersonated charges. Apparently he had issued a bum check for over $3,100, drawn on the name of a minor. And he, listen to this, I've just learned that with this check of $3,162, a bogus check, Vreeland rented four condominiums in Toronto at the temporary VIP suites, and then turned around and sublet the same units and received $3,800 in exchange. And I submit to you, is this the action of a U.S. naval officer? I don't think so. As you say, the judges in Canada, three Superior Court judges, all agreed that his testimony did not have any basis in any reality they understood. And basically, as American judges, by the way, have done, dismissed it out of hand, but only after weeks of hearings and really bending over backwards to hear his tale.
It seems as though that the immigration system that is designed to protect legitimate refugees is somewhat being taken advantage of by Mr. Vreeland to draw out his extradition. And it's certainly...
I'm personally concerned about that. I was involved some years ago in a case attempting to get someone into Canada. They hadn't broken any laws, but it was important they be here. And at one point, we debated claiming refugee status, and there was some basis for it, but in the end, we decided not to do this because it would get in the way of more legitimate claims from people like, South American countries who were in danger for their lives, and I still feel strongly that Mr. Vreeland has no right to do this. In fact, I believe it was Judge Campbell, one of the last justices, expressed his displeasure in the final hearing at the use of by Vreeland's lawyers of Canadian immigration laws to spin out something as patently false as this entire claim. My best guess is that come September, Mr. Vreeland will be extradited to the United States. He will not be murdered there for treason, as he claims. In fact, the various people he says are chasing them, the Russian mob, the U.S. mob, Russian, U.S., Canadian intelligence, and others, as one justice said in Canada, it's impossible to conceive that they could even coordinate their own intelligence and attacks. The man is a con artist and a fraud, and again, I am very much concerned over the implications for internet reporting, and I do wish that Mr. Rupert would review the facts, as you, myself, and others have extensively researched, and issue a statement, if not a sentence, reformulating his position on Mr. Vreeland. we really don't need any more of this distraction. This is very, very serious. The other issue that I think is of great concern that I mentioned in my article, Fraudman, is that the discounting of the Vreeland hoax by mainstream newspaper columnists has either led them or allowed them to make sweeping statements saying that all notions of U.S. government or government agency complicity in September 11th, all allegations of a broader 9-1-1 conspiracy are equally bogus, equally false. So this has handed quite a lot of ammunition to the debunkers of September 11th evidence, really, and reporting showing that, in fact, there was a lot more going on than we've been told.
It seems to have also given some people who have some issues with Mr. Rupert a golden opportunity to discredit him publicly.
Yes, and that is unfortunate. I have refrained from attacking him publicly, attacking him personally. It's not my wish to do so. I have. I did say to him that I wondered why a reporter of his abilities would stay with this story. It's really unfortunate because in so doing, in discrediting himself by sticking with this preposterous tale, his very solid and well-documented reporting is now or can be called into question, and I would hate to see that happen. But I think many people are looking twice at dispatches from Mr. Rupert, which is unfortunate.
Well, you've written a book called All Fall Down, which focuses in on the 9/11 tragedy experience. And you've obviously referenced a lot of reporters,
yes.
Rupert being one of them. Now, in referencing his reports, is there anything that Rupert is talking about that is original to his investigations? As it would appear that Vreeland, even though he wasn't the first person to report about Vreeland, he was the first one, I think, to really take the story and push it into the consciousness of a lot more people than would have normally heard about it. Is there any other story that Rupert has done the same thing with, or that is his own domain, his own investigations?
Yes. Some of his insights drawn from his experience with the LAPD referencing the drug trade in the United States appears to come from, and I'm prepared to accept that it does in fact come from his own experience, and I was able to tie that into the big picture, if you will, of presidential complicity, U.S. military complicity, intelligence services complicity in the, I don't want to say ancient, arms for drugs trade. Certainly has been going on since Vietnam. And by doing so, was able to corroborate, the broader strokes of his experiences and allegations. So that does appear to be not only unique to his experience in those instances, but remains valuable today.
You alluded to the fact that you saw the report that was circulating on the internet, courtesy of Mr. Rupert once again, regarding the poisoning incident where Delmar Vreeland alleges to be poisoned by wine he was sent by the chairman of the Federal Reserve in the United States, Alan Greenspan.
Yeah.
It just seems to me that when I saw that, my thought was, well, great, now no one's going to believe this.
Exactly. And even Mr. Rupert has, even that gave him pause, and he appeared in, it was a story in the LA Times, very defensive and not quite sure. He said, and this was striking, he told the LA Times last June that since all the information received was solely from Vreeland concerning this this conversation he had with him by phone, as you relate, that he had been poisoned by a bottle of wine sent in by Alan Greenspan. Since all this information came only from Vreeland, he says, who was obviously disoriented and ill, I couldn't go with an actual news story. So to be accurate here, Mr. Rupert had released this information over a private or semi-private subscription list, I guess is the proper term. And, of course, in the way of the Internet, it got bounced. It got bounced around. He appeared to be, you know, slightly backing away, but at this point, if we can step back from the personal, a reporter can become so committed to a story and so, to use a phrase I heard from you earlier, in over his head, that it becomes very, very difficult to back away. In fact, I understand in myself the tendency to jump on an exclusive. The excitement, the adrenal rush of having an exclusive or what appears to be an exclusive, and start trumpeting from the rooftops. That's very real. The temptation is very real. All of us do it at one time or another. Hopefully, the story bears up, and we've considered it and corroborated it before we publish it. But once we do that, and once we continue to lay bricks on top of that foundation, solid or not, it becomes very, very difficult to back away from it, let alone demolish the whole thing. So I suspect that Mr. Rupert and others who have issued a story without proper corroboration are finding and have found themselves in very difficult situations of how to extricate themselves from a story like this. And, of course, Vreeland himself is using it to solicit money. A man convicted of fraud, convicted of kiting checks, break and enter, grand larceny. Some of these are felonies, by the way. And these are convictions. Continues to solicit money, fraudulently, I would submit, on his claims of being a persecuted U.S. naval operative when we know, in fact, that back in, what was it, 87, he did enlist in the U.S. Navy as a seaman recruit, and according to the U.S. Navy, was discharged 4 months later, meaning, as a former member of the U.S. Navy, he flunked basic shoe shine and drill. In admitting to police records readily available on your site and others, in admitting to those records, does he claim that the Navy always got him off? In fact, if you are an active duty member of the United States military and you have any civil infraction up to short of murder, you are tried in a military court-martial situation. You are not tried in civil courts. So right there, his story collapses. So it's riddled with inconsistencies, and as I've said in my own reporting, he sounds like a kid before the principal changing his story to suit. And I'm concerned about any reporter that would stay with a story like this.
After we did our initial investigation,
yeah,
we went back and reread some of his original articles.
Yes.
And we found many, many errors in the original reports. Things from simple things like, for instance, in one of the very first articles he wrote, Mike Rupert claimed that Delmar Vreeland was wanted for a fraud in Troy, Michigan, which, of course, Vreeland says never happened.
Right.
But also that it was the credit card was in his own name, which we found to definitely not be the case.
That's interesting.
Well, his articles all seemed littered with this information. It almost looks like...
Uh-oh.
It almost looks like what he's done is just reprinted what Vreeland has told him.
Yes. Oh, yes. Without checking. And
it doesn't seem like he's checked very much at all.
No. You might help me with this. As far as I know, the actual transcripts from these judgments in Canada, as far as I know, were not made available on the net until after that initial interview was published. Of course, they're freely available now, and no corrections have been forthcoming on that original report. The police records, of course, have been available on the police websites. I got them myself and through your website. Thank you again. But that kind of information could have been easily checked. And in fact, if we look at if we can call them apologists for Mr. Vreeland, and there's more than one here, they dismiss all of these claims, all of these charges, all of these convictions as somehow irrelevant and hardly worthy of note next to his, you know, astonishing note and story. And, of course, it's central to his claims. I hope that this is a lesson to all Internet reporters. It has certainly put me on my professional toes. I like to think I'm careful in my reporting. All Fall Down, the new edition, has 25 pages of references, so people can check it out. And nevertheless, I think all of us have to look very carefully and continually watch ourselves when we get caught up in the excitement of yet another new net exclusive. It is so easy to go with this kind of material. And as you're pointing out, it is relatively as easy to check material using this incredible electronic referencing source.
And, I mean, most of the documents that we got were obtained by making a phone call to people referenced in newspaper articles and that appeared on the Internet. But getting back to Mr. Rupert again, I'm sorry. You know, he has told us that we are going to get our comeuppance come September. And I suppose that would cover anybody who is challenging him or Vreeland's story.
How would that? What form will that take?
We don't know.
He wasn't willing to divulge that.
I mean, that he'll be proven right when Mr. Vreeland somehow evades extradition, or that I'm not come up in sense.
It's my understanding that in the history of the modern immigration system in Canada, not a single refugee has been allowed into this country from the United States of America. In fact, as a reference, I read that in the Globe and Mail last week.
Wow.
But getting back again to Rupert and so on, despite the preponderance of evidence that points to Vreeland being a fraud, is there anything in his story that you found that just personally, even though you know he's a fraud, that vexes you, that you just go, how the heck did he do this?
Good question, and I have gone over and over and over it.
Like, there's the phone call to the Pentagon.
I'm pretty well satisfied. On the face of it, the recorded fact that he and his lawyer stood up again in open court, called information to demonstrate that they were calling the Pentagon, got someone on the line, apparently a switchboard operator, asked for Lieutenant Vreeland's office by name and office number, and were confirmed to be on some kind of list. As I said in my report, that was an exciting moment for Vreeland fans everywhere. The judge, however, was very irate subsequently to learn that Mr. Vreeland and or his representatives had been in touch by email and also by phone with a person or persons inside the Pentagon prior to that phone call and could have set this up. Obviously, you and I can't call the Pentagon and say, "Hey, put my list on the name put my name on your list with an office number." But the judge felt certain that someone had been coerced or was repaying a favor or somehow had been gotten to or agreed to do this, and discounted the Pentagon phone call. And I'd say that that alone is not enough to make me go with a man who I know was kicked out of the Navy more than a decade ago. His other claims to veracity hinge on, of course, Mr. Bastion, this formerly real live Canadian computer technician working in the Canadian embassy in Moscow, who Vreeland says he met up with, and together they got their hands on these anti-Star Wars blueprints and altered them so that the weapons nullifying Star Wars would themselves be rendered useless. Bastion did die under mysterious circumstances Press reports say it appears that he could have been poisoned. Of course, the pill used in his link to his death is taken for schizophrenia. He could have overdosed on this drug. We're not certain. But Mr. Vreeland has a history of seizing on bits of information and weaving them into his tales. But it wasn't until, I believe, June actually, of 2001 that he talked to his lawyer about this and learned of Bastian's death. So I'm not prepared to go very far with that either. It's easy to weave things into your tales in retrospect and very difficult to provide original, verifiable information.
It's interesting how Vreeland likes to tie dead people into his story. Rear Admiral or Borda, Bastian. He talked to me about many of the people who died in Arkansas that were related to supposedly Madeleine Albright. This is in a telephone conversation I had with him. He does like to keep track of people who've died.
Yes, that suggests a pattern in itself. Not always, however. You'll recall that another claim to documented veracity on Mr. Vreeland's part is the so-called orders that he had received from the U.S. Navy to report for duty somewhere or other. And in fact, the name the orders were issued to has been blacked out. And when questioned on this, Mr. Vreeland has said again publicly, "I did that to protect the, I'm having trouble with the logic here. Protect the person whose orders these were, but he's reporting them to be issued to himself. So, I'm having trouble with his own logic. But the name was blocked out, and apparently he got his hands on somebody's naval orders and claiming them as his own. But we don't see any proof. I've asked simply that Mr. Vreeland present his U.S. Navy ID card. He doesn't need to put out his super secret spy card to protect an identity that he has blabbed widely to the press, but he can certainly, like all active duty U.S. military members, present his military ID. Something that simple, that easy, has not been done.
Did you ever try to get in contact with Mr. Vreeland himself?
I considered it, and I guess I got a bit squeamish and backed off and thought, why do I want to beat on somebody who's this delusional, frankly? I certainly assumed, maybe made a presumption here, that I would not get the truth out of him. But the long answer to your question is no, I have never spoken directly to Mr. Vreeland. I can also say that I have, by email, contacted the Office of Naval Intelligence and asked them directly, this man, Mr. Vreeland, is purporting to work for you. He has many claims, some controversial. Can you tell me if, in fact, he does or has ever worked for the Office of Naval Intelligence? So far, I've not even received a reply, so I can only wonder what they're making of all this and why the United States Navy would tell the RCMP in Ontario that, in fact, they discharged this man many years ago. I believe it was 87, and now you're pointing to evidence, possible evidence, that he was in fact in the U.S. Navy. I've had to make a similar decision that I have other work that I consider very important in regards to the ongoing revelations concerning September 11th, Afghanistan, and now this threatened attack on Iraq. Your phone call this morning caught me. I was very much involved with that. However, this story, I guess, has legs, as they say, this Vreeland story, and it has to be dealt with. Again, we have a picture of a desperate, I would even say pathetic man that we could have some compassion for, but a desperate man who is trying to stay out of not only Canadian jails, but certainly avoid going back to the U.S. under any circumstances because of the many charges he has waiting for him there, again in five different states. So this man will say anything to avoid going back to the United States, to avoid extradition.
You mentioned the detrimental effect this will have on internet journalism in general. But I'm wondering if you share the same feelings about, and you hinted at this earlier as well, about September 11th investigations in general. Do you think that this has had some kind of negative impact?
Yes, I think there's no doubt that some columnists in the LA Times and other papers have seized on the blaring discrepancies in Mr. Vreeland's testimony and Mr. Rupert's reporting to discredit and discount much more serious reporting, and I say serious in the sense well-documented
right.
reporting around serious questions concerning the agents and agencies and agendas of September 11th. And I won't say would have, I can say could have a severe impact. I can say has already had an impact in allowing some mainstream reporters who've looked at the Vreeland story to poo-poo the entire idea of any underhanded dealings on the part of the U.S. government concerning the attacks of September 11th, and I'm very concerned at that and how this story can now be used in the future to provide ammunition to debunk, again, the most well-documented reports concerning September 11th. Again and again, I have found personally, perhaps you have found this to be true, other reporters certainly understand that when we are attacked personally, or when something extraneous, such as the Vreeland hoax, is brought into the discussion and our evidence is ignored, in fact, in order to distract from our evidence, we're probably on the right track, but unfortunately, all the reader or the viewer or the listener reads, sees, or hears is the debunking. Because we have a president select who, according to the Supreme Court of Florida, took a fraudulent election, assumed the presidency after what they ruled has been a fraudulent election. We don't need to go into all the details, but we have an illegitimate president. We're well aware of the draconian Patriot Act and other moves he's done to basically scrap basic rights in the Constitution. We're aware of the casualties, the terrible casualties in Afghanistan, and the fact that no one close to Al-Qaeda has been captured in Afghanistan. We're aware of his threatened renewed attacks on a shattered country called Iraq, where more than 1 million people have died, according to the UN. Given the gravity of these very urgent issues, it's very important, I think, that the Vreeland hoax be laid to rest, and that journalists learn from this, and that stories like Vreeland's are not allowed to distract us from very real critical issues. I certainly thank you for your reporting, and going back to your earlier question as we finish here, I should add that certainly being directed to your website by my legal secretary researcher opened a treasure trove of documentation to me.